Okay, everybody out there, what is going on? Steven Ignoramus here. We are here live with Amanda Fulmer. Very, very excited to have her on today. You know, we've been talking about viruses and exosomes and terrain theory and things like that the last couple months or so. I guess it's been about 6 months now. So very, very excited to have Amanda on to talk about alternative health, mainstream health, or just health. She holds a Bachelor of Science in Agricultural Biotechnology from the University of Lethbridge in Alberta, Canada, and a degree of Doctor in Naturopathic Medicine from the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine in Toronto. She also is an author and a product producer, I believe, and a Reiki master and a holistic health practitioner. If you want to find all of her information, it is over at yumnaturals.com, and you can find all that stuff linked below in the show description. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Amanda. Welcome to Call Me Ignorant, which is going to be the podcast that it's uploaded as. So thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. What's the name? Where did you pull that from, Call Me Ignorant?
Well, I mean, I don't use my last name online, and eventually I'm going to kind of reveal it to people or whatever, but I just like learning from a perspective of ignorance. So I named myself Steven Ignoramus for this kind of the screen name type deal. But I think, you know, that is, to me, I'm a music teacher and an educator, and to me, the basis of all knowledge starts from not knowing something and at least admitting it. So that's kind of where it came from. And I'm glad to have you on today, because I was saying off air that, I don't believe viruses exist in the way they do. I've seen enough evidence of that, but also I don't really know how to talk science. I'm not schooled in science. I'm schooled in music. So basically I had you on today to kind of explain some of these things, explain some of your work, and, kind of maybe just give your opinions or facts on the biggest story of the last 5 years, which is the coronavirus. So, before we do that, I was interested in how you got into what you do. Like, first of all, do you like or dislike the term alternative health?
I think it's primary health, and it's the only health. I don't usually use the term very often because it was created as more of a derogatory thing to say, well, you could go to those other people if you really want to. So it's, you could say complementary. Sometimes there's things that we need to work with other practitioners, or integrative in some regards, but I just usually say holistic because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the holism. We're talking about all the parts working together. We're talking about the integrated self with also the environment, emotional, mental, physical, spiritual, all of those aspects. That's holistic. It's togetherness, right? So I usually go towards those types of titles rather than alternative.
Yeah. And that's why I put everything just in air quotes, scare quotes, because I kind of feel the same way. There's just health. And one of the reasons that kind of turned me on to, first of all, I guess before we even get into the COVID thing, when did you start in health? Were you interested in it before college, or was it an accident that you just got into it, or what?
Oh yeah, I was always interested and sensitive to nature and animals primarily. So I was sensitive and I was empathic in my youth. I saw things that other people didn't see, like energy. I understood that everything was vibrational. And so I already had a baseline just from who I am, how I was born. So that obviously is going to predilect my tendencies and what I gravitate towards. And I was always curious about why I was here. A lot of people are not so existential, but I was very existential.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to know why I'm here, and why did I come back to this place of illusion? And that became me, I was sort of seek. I started to read a lot of books. I always wanted to learn. I always wanted to know. I'm like you in that sense. I was like, well, I might think I know the thing, but I'd like to continue to learn. Even let's pretend I don't know. Let's pretend I forgot. And I'll start to, because you'd always learn one new kernel of something that you didn't have before within the thing that you thought you knew, and you'd perfect it. And, but then I really started caring more about this earth and animals, and I stopped eating meat when I was 16 because I just couldn't. I learned about factory farming. I was really upset about it. And I thought that if I can take some action on my own, then that could be very powerful, and I could make some changes in my life that could impact, humanity. So I was always very humanitarian in my thinking. I was never really about just me. I was always about everybody and everything all the time. I just always would think like that, which would cause me lots of suffering and pain in a lot of ways as well. That's the mark of a healer who's of that mindset. And so I just began to, I was going to actually become an artist, but then once I realized, or I thought that maybe that wasn't the right route for me, I decided to go into veterinary medicine, and that's where I started my beginnings into into the medicinal world. And so that then I wanted to be a holistic vet, but that didn't go so well for the vet industry, which is extremely conventional and pharma-based and surgical intervention-based. And talking about holistic and energy and color medicine and vibrational medicine did not go over so well. My mentor at the time, Dr. Stephen Marsden, he said, why don't you go to naturopathic college and do people instead? And I was like, well, I'll think about it. And then it was really my only option. I just sort of got steered into it. And I, at that time, I still felt like it was important to have the doctor title and all these things. And if I was going to help people, which I was already, people would find me. They always have found me forever. Even animals that would be dying or hurt would come to me and find me. Sometimes I would give them Reiki in my hands, but sometimes they would die in my hands because they wanted to be held as they crossed over. I'd have all these really interesting experiences like that. But then I went to naturopathic college, realized it's not really where I'm at because I'm way more even fringe than that. And then I realized also that the industry is being damaged by conventional medicine and the desire to be on par with MDs, which would be the last thing I'd ever want to be on par with because these are probably the most ignorant people on the earth. So I'm really not interested in being competing with them to push drugs. So I walked away from licensure after graduation, realized those really weren't my people after all. And I've been learning ever since. And that was about 11 years ago now.
Wow. So, you know, one thing I heard you mention in one of your videos is that it's kind of what you just said, where it's kind of like you don't think the traditional medicine field is changeable from the inside, because the second that someone tries to bring alternative theories, they're going to either lose their license, they're going to be ostracized. And do you think that, you know, I don't even know what to call it, like modern medicine is past the point of no return?
It's a big question. I would say that as long as there are the controllers of the institutions and the doctors with the licensing and with the repercussions if they do step out of line by losing their license and therefore not being legally allowed to practice, then yeah, the controllers are the pharmaceutical industry that looks like they're supposedly for the people. For example, the FDA, the CDC, a lot of the colleges and so forth, they're all in bed together for pharmaceutical drug money making, not for health of people, because if they were, it wouldn't look like this at all. There would be no vaccines, there would be none of these suppressive drugs. We would already have our elegant solutions, which we know exist. I think it's about crumbling. I think it has to fall in on itself. It has to impact its own. And a lot of people are leaving the industry and finding their own way, and it's weakening the foundation. And so I think that's really ultimately what's going to happen and what we're sort of seeing, you know, the little trends of already happening now.
Yeah, I think a big part of that is, you know, when there's desperation and when something's dying, they will prop up things. And like, I don't know, like, I guess I'm talking about is I even heard you mention it, the TikTok videos of the health practitioners, like there are heroes, there's statues of them, all that stuff. And it's like almost late stage propaganda where you it's so fake that you have to prop it up and like put it on a pedestal. And you can see like almost the groans of all kinds of institutions right now, politics, cities, you know, communities, institutions. And how gradual was this? You know, if we take from the day you went to college, to the day you were sure that this institution was just corrupt, how gradual was it?
It was in my first year.
So not at all. Okay, it was like right away. Wow.
Well, yeah, I started to have some questions because I was already awake to the agenda, mm-hmm. like the New World Order agenda, the, you know, one world government, corruption. I already knew way back when about the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and the big oil barons and the Flexner Report. Like, I was awake to all that stuff. I already knew vaccines were fraudulent, and I already had been questioning germ theory and terrain theory long before I started school, because again, I was interested in reading everything, and especially books that were older. Especially yes. non-modern books, because if it smelled really musty, I'm like, I'm going to read that book, you know? So yeah. I learned from my elders is what I really did, through their books and through case studies, because yeah, you can use your double placebo controlled bullcrap study. That's almost all but useless and easy to manipulate with statistics to prove your little stupid poison works. Yep. But if you want to get real, you look at cases. And you see what happened to that individual, because this is all individualized medicine. When you start applying proper procedures and correct the host and they heal again and again and again, there's your evidence, there's your science, right? So I just already came in with that. And what I started to see was that the powers that be were actually supporting Health Canada, which is a corrupt organization, which is again part of the pharmaceutical cartel. And they were working alongside of them to create Codex Alimentarius, which is essentially the demonization of perfectly safe supplements and food-based healing methods, and to a slow kill, death by a thousand cuts method to convince the naturopaths that they want prescribing rights, like doctors, that they want to push drugs on them.
Get them in the club.
Get in their club, get in the hospitals, all this kind of stuff. And which I was like, why do we want that? We don't want, that's not a nature doctor. A nature doctor takes them off the drugs every time, all the time, 100%. You take them off drugs, you never use them. What are you doing? So there was that red flag. And then there was this whole NPN numbering system that we have in Canada, where basically Health Canada has to approve if it's safe or not. And these are natural supplements that have never killed anybody using it properly. I mean, even iron, you'd have to like drink gallons of it to die. You know, I mean, this is ridiculous. These are safe things. The regulation is already redundant in the industry. If there's some legitimate snake oil, and actually snake oil was a real product that actually did work, but I mean, what we call snake oil, which is a bad product, which is what we translate into that, mm-hmm. that the market will not buy it. You will get so bad reviews on that. You know, it's done. Okay. Like I make 150 natural products by hand, and my reviews are like 5-star stellar across the board, because you make something that's valuable, that works and says what it, you know, does what it says. And again, you're consistent. Then guess what? You're safe in the market because of the feedback, right? And obviously you're going to know what you're doing. You're not going to be mixing weird things together and like guesswork. You're coming in educated when you do it, but you don't need some agency, which is just a policing agency, to make sure it's not that effective, so that it's meh. So when people go and get their leak, kind of work, it's kind of okay. They don't want stellar products on the shelves, because guess what? That's competition for big pharma poisons, which they have to keep forever expanding their bottom line, because it's like a cancer. They're like psychotic people who just is not enough for them what they have. They want to own and control everything. They're megalomaniacs. So that's I saw in first year, and I got blacklisted pretty quick. I started to notice and smell a rat.
Yeah. In the industry. I have a couple questions. When did you start making your own products, and was there a learning curve there?
I was, I was always very crafty and handy and artist. Cool. So because I was able, I always knew how to make things with my hands. So that wasn't really the hard part. I know how to cook, you know, basically by taste. I know what things go together. I already inherently had that sorted out. But then I took a lot of biochemistry and chemistry in university. And so obviously I was learning more about alchemy and synergy. And when you combine herbs, I learned in naturopathic medicine how to combine different things to get make a proper tincture, for example, that's effective, where you do sort of a layering effect. I studied essential oils, and with essential oils, you'll have top notes and base notes, and you'll have things that are complementary to one another that assist the body a little more holistically, right? So I already had those principles coming in, and it really came down to actual pure necessity. I got pregnant and had a baby, and I was always very clean with everything I ever used. And the diaper cream I was going to get for my daughter, it just wasn't good enough. It just wasn't pure enough. It still had questionable petrochemicals in it and things that I just don't feel good in my body to put it on a baby's newborn skin. It just, no, I'm not doing it. But I needed something to use occasionally, because I know I cloth diapered her, and sometimes the urine, if the urine sits on the skin, it would irritate the skin a little bit, right? Especially overnight. So you needed something. So that was one of the first things I designed. The very, very first thing was I moved up north into Mosquitoville, and I said, well, I better make a mosquito repellent straight away. So I made that was the very, very, very first product, just with essential oils, very simple, and it worked. And then I made the diaper cream next. And then the sunscreen came after that because I needed sunscreen. And then the calendula salve came after that for wounds. And it just sort of happened very organically.
Wow. That's how a lot of good stuff gets made. I mean, really, like, survival and necessity is I think it's a quote. It's like the mother of invention or something like that. So yeah, that's awesome. So, you know, why do you think, okay, so let's actually get to, like, kind of the one of the main subjects. So you don't believe viruses are real the way they say, you know, like what they're calling viruses, you say are exosomes, correct?
What I say are what they're calling viruses are waste particles from our body that have been utilized and expired, meaning, well, they weren't really ever alive, but they're particles that our body makes in response to stress and injury. Our bodies are self-healing mechanisms, and we have a whole microbiota living inside of us, and also an entire lineage of cells that is completely ignored by the modern medical cult. That's inherent in our blood, and there's many names for it. They're called somatids, they're called microzyma, they're called proteins. There's like multiple names because many different bright researchers and healers, people of medicine and science, found these, identified these in living blood. Now, if you continue to study stained images of blood or other exudates, things you've removed from the living body, flatten them down, smoosh them, color them, and put them under heat and light, you're going to alter those particles. And it's very convenient to do that if you're trying to tell a tall tale, if you know what I mean. So if you actually look inside the living blood, you will see with the proper microscope, like Beauchamp did, like many of the greats have been able to identify. Reif is another one who identified this in his microscope, which he designed. Gaston Nason's, he designed his own microscope, which was stolen and broken down by government and hidden away from the people. That should be circumspect right there, that this is not, they're not on the up and up. Because if they knew what his work was, they would be supporting it wholeheartedly and then giving the same microscope and producing it and giving it to other doctors to also study the living blood. But they don't want you to see that, because then you're going to identify these particles that are pleomorphic or polymorphic, and they change shape depending on the terrain. So if you have a problem in your body where the it's like we have rivers and movement in our body all the time. And if that is stagnant, if that stops or is blocked, which could be from diet, which could be from stress, which is from emotional issues, all kinds of situations can cause this to happen. And you get pooling and cutting off of certain areas of the body, then the pH begins to change and alter. And it can go acidic or it can go alkaline, either direction. But whatever that outcome is, it will start to shift the red blood cells in the microzyma that bleb off of the red blood cell membranes, and they will go through their 16-stage pleomorphic cycle and produce the microbe that is needed to be there to fix the problem. So if it's an acute problem, which means something that's come up more suddenly then it will create a bacterium. Okay, it will make a bacterium. You're actually creating them. They're not floating through the air and then you're breathing them in and catching them. Your body is producing them for a specific need. And that need could be either taking away damaged tissue and cleaning up the area. It could be repairing certain tissues. It could be delivering materials to areas. But primarily, they tend to be cleanup crew. So when you die, for example, the body is decomposing and your own microbiome changes format in order to go more in the fungal mold stage to break things down. And actually, they'll even create things like worms and parasites from your own body to break down the tissue. That's its job in nature. It will bring it back to the soil. And that's a lot of people are like the living dead. They're walking around with pockets of dead tissue. Like even a root canal is a classic example of that. They're literally walking around with dead tissue in their mouth. And of course, they're going to have always bacteria found there because the bacteria will never stop doing the job that they're meant to do, which is to try to repair the dead and damaged dying tissue, which I've said 1,000 times in many videos on this topic. And so if that resolves, then the bacteria and whatever, all those exudates will be removed from the body. And then somebody who's very ignorant and very stupid will take the waste particles that are being exuded from the body once the job is done, or even while the process is being done, there'll be waste coming out, obviously. And we'll take that and look at it and squish it under a microscope and whatever and put it on a petri dish and say, oh, look, it grew. Oh, I know the problem. You're infected. You have bacteria and you must have caught it from somebody and now you're sick. And now we have to kill it because that's the only way you're going to survive. And that's how stupid it is. It's basically, like I've said this analogy before, blaming the flies for causing your garbage when really they just came to your garbage to break it down for you, right?
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with viruses.
Interesting. I mean, it's kind of like a bait and switch. It's like a sleight of hand it's one of the things I bring up when I'm teaching a lot is kind of like order of operations, that if you switch if there's 8 steps and you switch one of them up, it can, or if you extrapolate from a flawed premise, if you do that for 100 years, your whole society could crumble. And it's crazy. And so that, you know, I'm very wary about saying that I'm like 100% right or whatever, but I know I'm right about that. It all you have to do is extrapolate out, no matter what the concept is. It could be politics. It could be any skill, any field. That's fascinating. So can we go back? So people like you and people in my chat that talk about this stuff, talk about it's Pasteur versus Bechamp. Can you tell me a little bit about, I heard you say in a video, you had a video about the RNA sequencing, that you said that Pasteur is a fraud and a liar. Now, quick story for the people in the chat as well. I read a book when I was a kid, it was a picture book, and it glorified Louis Pasteur. So in a funny way, it's kind of like, oh, my childhood. But tell me about that little feud and what that was all about.
Well, there's a really great book by R.B. Pearson called The Lie and the Something of Louis Pasteur. Sorry, I forgot the other little piece in there. Mm-hmm. But R.B. Pearson, and also there's Ethel Douglas Hume writes about Pasteur and Beauchamp from the time frame, from then, right? We have more modernistic exposés of Pasteur being a fraud. Basically, his scientific notes, his real notes, he kept close to his chest while he produced a second set of books, if you will, that he gave to the world and to the King of France and all the things that he had lied about, like rabies, for example, was his first big magic show lie. Where he took a dog and put it in public and injected the brain of the dog with this putrid matter from a rabbit's brain and caused this kind of hyper reaction inflammation, which would make anybody froth at the mouth, and then named it rabies. And, you know, he basically mimicked a disease in the wild of a severe deficiency and a problem in which the animal is starving so much they've just continually been ingesting putrid matter and eating a lot of, you know, the wrong things, a lot of chemicals. There's a lot of explanations for why you get a certain set of symptoms, and it can be multiple inputs, right? So he did this fake fraud thing, and then he pretended to make a vaccine of that material to prove that he was a miracle man and to sell this fraud lie of vaccines. And of course, the issue is it seems to be the fraudsters and the liars and the ones who are narcissistic and charismatic, and they're good at lying and looking like they're nice, good people to everybody else. But at home, they go and beat their kids and their wife, right? So that's like the classic narcissist. They think they're being good to the world, but really they're demons inside. And so he was very charismatic in that regard. He followed Antoine Beauchamp around, basically, and studied what he did and would take what he did. For example, they had a problem with silkworms. They didn't know what the problem was. They kept dying. And I'm sure right now, Louis Pasteur is living in some karmic hell where silkworms are eating him alive in a repeated hell loop or something, because how many deaths he caused of silkworms for years. This guy, I'm sure, is in that hell loop right now. But basically, Beauchamp had the answer. And what he did, because he was an elegant thinker, a brilliant man, and a gentleman, and not a boaster. He wasn't one to sell himself. He wasn't going to even, oh, that Pasteur, he's such a pest. Oh, well, oh, leave him be. Oh, don't throw him in jail. Don't sue him. Oh, don't be silly. You know, and he just wanted to work. He didn't care that this little fly kept falling around and plagiarizing his work and altering it. And so the silkworms basically had a mite that was identified by Beauchamp, and he made a chamber for it, and he used a small amount of creosote fog. So he just used creosote fog into the chamber, and he healed the situation so that they didn't die any longer, which was amazing. And this was right at the beginning of the epidemic that they were experiencing in the silk industry. And so the king said to Pasteur, go and learn what he's doing so we can do it for our silkworms so we don't lose the industry. And the guy came back and he said, oh, I don't know. We don't really, can't still figure it out. Let's try this and let's try that. And I couldn't even almost read the whole thing because I felt kind of ill, you know, after that. He was just that disgusting of a person that he would pretend and milk this out for his own, you know, he would travel on the king's dime so that he and all the politicians' money so that he could have a great time and go to all these places to see if he could figure out this problem, you know. And he was a psychopath, right? Mm.
So a narcissistic psychopath looking out for their own gain type thing. And wow, that's very, so is that feud the origin of the germ theory, terrain theory? Like, was Beauchamp, was he the inventor of terrain theory?
This is ancient knowledge, really. I mean, we can reinvent things, but I think the truth always exists and we just pick up on it, you know, occasionally. Wow. But it started, you know, with Jenner and with Pasteur. They were really the big liars and the ones who really got picked up by the politicians, and they liked the lie, because the lie of telling someone that there's an invisible agent there to kill you is a perfect way to control your population and take away rights and maneuver yourself into higher positions of power and steal out people's land and throw people that are unwanted in jail and cause all kinds of harm and death and destruction and so on, which is what we're seeing right now yet again, because we don't seem to learn from history at all. So that's the same story, but it really was, you know, some of the greats back at, yeah, around Beauchamp and around that time frame, because it was multiple people that were starting to figure out things like, I can't remember if it was Beauchamp or it was one before his teacher before, but I remember reading a story about, they noticed, because they didn't have the special microscopes back then. I think it was actually, this might've been Nason's. And one of them started to notice that every time at high noon, when the UV was high, they could see these new particles under the microscope, because these are people looking under microscope all the time. And they would notice that when the UV was high, they could see differently under the microscope than they could when the UV was low. They were seeing other stuff. And they're like, this is strange. And so I'm pretty sure this was Nason. So I'm pretty sure this is a little bit later. So he said, you know, I'm going to make a microscope that has two types of light. He's going to use I believe he used an incandescent combined with a special kind of UV light. And the combination of the lights made the correct frequency so he could see these particles, right? And so that was quite brilliant, really, to figure that out. There were different ages that where we got things cropped up, but they never really took. It's kind of like with DMSO, like it was uncovered many, many decades before it was really figured out. It was like early 1900s, I think it was 1930, I think, when he first isolated it. And then it just didn't get anywhere until the 50s. It was just like, meh, we didn't know what to do with it or whatever. We didn't know it was for health. We just use it for this thing, right? So sometimes something can be invented or an idea can begin, but it doesn't take hold until some time frame. So I'll have to look up that history again. I'm a bit rusty on it. I haven't read it in a little while, but
That's really interesting what you're saying about like the truth just gets rediscovered. It doesn't. Yeah. I mean, so quick question. I just thought of it right now. I mean, I've seen a bunch of videos about how, you know, viruses are not real in the way they say they're, but what about the bubonic plague? Cause that was a bacterial infection, right? Is that just a lot of people detoxing at the same time? Like what do you think that, I mean, it's so long ago and I don't know if you had writings from that time, but what do you think the bubonic plague or the Black Death, you know, what was?
Well, a lot of these epidemics and so forth are basically causation from starvation. When you're nutritionally deficient, you're susceptible to all sorts of issues. Imagine you don't have enough nutrients to run your systems optimally, and you start to get what I said, like pooling of certain areas, tissues break down because you can't repair them anymore. You have a lot of wastes inside the body. You're probably under a lot of stress if you're starving to death. Maybe you're overcrowded conditions and you're all not even drinking enough water. At that time, there's a lot of coal burning. So there's a lot of air pollution on top of it. So you have to consider the time frame, the conditions, all the other factors, because every single thing that has ever been a disease state is either from a poisoning, from a nutritional deficiency, or from a severe blockage inside the body. That's the only things that cause disease. So there's no causation other than if you have a rare situation where you got dumped into a vat of like hot, you know, hot bacteria and you had open sores, like maybe you'd have a problem for a little while. But I'm talking about in the day-to-day experience, it's not what happens. But in the plague, in the time of the plague, again, remember, the victors write the history. So, and it's like the broken telephone story. You have these like historical bullcrap written, and then people just keep telling the story over and over again and change things slightly and whatever. But, you know, these people were starving to death. It's very easy to have rat infested areas. You'll have a lot of fleas and other vermin that are fomites that are carrying little parasites and mites and things that are very easy to break open the skin and cause huge lymphatic problems. So it really was like a mass illness, lymphatic illness caused by waste products building up in these people's bodies. And I'm sure there was other problems with their water source as well. So we can really only speculate. I know I did look at that history probably 10 years ago, and there were some clues. There were some hints that maybe there was an extermination done of the town and people were putting arsenic and other poisons inside a lot of the wells. So there was a question about that. So there was a lot of other historical speculation as to what went on. But imagine you're peeing and pooing in the streets.
It's rats everywhere.
Rats terrible everywhere. Food. Fleas, terrible food. Yeah. Your teeth are falling out of your head. I mean, this is so, and then, but it was a magical virus or a bacteria
that's crazy, Amanda. I think it's like from talking to you and like listening to people talk about this, it seems like there's a huge element of laziness in this. Like where you, I don't know if it's late, but like inability to identify how many variables there are, because you're just in that little thing, speech you just said about bubonic plague, you listed like 20 variables, and it's just easier to be like, it comes from outside. It's an enemy. It's almost like an enemy at the gates thing where that's what really makes sense to me. It's like, well, if you think about, are your problems internal or external? They're mostly internal. And I don't even mean health, because I don't know anything about health, but I know a little bit of like psychological health and like philosophy. It's usually you're your own worst enemy. Most of the time, there are enemies out there. There's people that are bad people, but most of the time you're defeating yourself. And that's why it makes sense to me that it's like about choices in like environment. And like, there's not a boogeyman usually. There can be, but you know, that's just, it just seems to me that's like a a laziness thing and a superiority thing, where we've got our coats, we're in the system. This system is 150 years old, and we know. And how could you couldn't be right, because we've got people in authority and people in charge and people, smart people with coats, that are right about stuff. And it's almost like a laziness thing. Do you agree with that?
It's an indoctrination thing and a slow method of making people lazy. And it happens a lot. There's a lot of cycles you'll see in history where we've have, wartime and warriors and struggle and famine and fighting for this and fighting for that. And then the war is won and the celebration happens and everyone starts to relax and the food is plenty and the babies start getting born and all of these things, it changes. It just goes into another cycle, and then you'll get more laziness, and the men will get softer, and their kids won't know war, so they won't be the same warrior, and they won't know about killing the same way, and all of these things, and it just bleeds out. And then you get feminism, so you get the pretend men thinking they're the ones in charge because they're like the men are so wimpy and effeminate that they don't know what to do anymore. And like you get all this, and that's where we are now, kind of like upside down. And then we have to like create strife so that we get strong again, because this is how we get strong, is through, because we haven't learned how to actually maintain it without the suffering part. And I think the question now is, are we going to change the story where we decide to be diligent and to work hard on ourselves and to care about the progress of our souls without needing the suffering and strife? Or do we always need the suffering and strife in order to strengthen ourselves and our next generations? Or is this just going to keep going and going and going and going, like in this pattern, right? Because we're going to create a war right now. We are in a war right now. We're in a psychological war. And we've been manipulated differently than previous situations because there's new technology to manipulate us with. They didn't have televisions. They didn't have all this tech. They didn't have all the same levels of propaganda. You didn't hear about what even happened in the next town unless the guy with the pony came with the note to tell you what was happening, right? Now we get it in 2 seconds and you know what's happening in Iceland right now, right? So it's very different world. And it's exciting though, because if we take it to the next level, what'll happen is we are intercommunicating with one another with our new gifts. So it's like the internet is just the one step of how we're going to communicate with one another. And if we ascend properly, then we'll start to open up our suppressed parts of ourselves, our inner eye, our inner ear, our inner heart, our inner gut, all of these gifts that we have that we can actually telepathically communicate with one another. We don't even need the same internet as we use right now. So can we get to that level of our humanity, of our growth? And
Oh
I
man,
think,
that's hard. I mean, yeah, you need critical mass. Like it's really, really hard with the people in charge, like the controllers. What I want to do is talk about just COVID now, and then I'm going to circle back to talking about the controllers and stuff, because I'm really, these people are good at what they do, and I want to, in all the doctors can't be intentionally complicit. I mean, they need useful idiots. You need like multiple layers of this stuff. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But so, COVID's fake. Like the as it's presented, COVID is fake. It's hard to. A lot of people are just really emotional, so they're like, all these dead people. Are you saying these people didn't die? Blah, blah, blah. And I m most of the people on your side or our side, and people, most of the people in the chat, to me, these are the people that can stay calm, and they can make the argument, not without, and just talk about either the facts or longer form discussions about what's going on. So, just from the beginning of COVID, like people heard about this in China in November, December of last year. I know that the big control is a big part of this, like Bill Gates, name your person or whatever. But what do we do about this? Like, if you're correct, if I'm correct, what's to be done? Like, do we just wake people up? Do you go on the street with a megaphone? How do we go about either convincing people, or is there nothing to be done? What do you think?
Well, I mean, when this, it's very easy to create a one-time small event in order to perpetuate a lie. All you need is a couple of sick people, maneuvering your people who are in on it in the right position, which you really only need one director of one hospital, or you only need one of the higher ups to really be part of it, who's the main directors. And they've been working that for a long time, getting their people in places. But the events can be real, meaning, you know, where did these so-called epicenters begin? Well, Wuhan, China, because why? Well, they have incinerator, garbage incinerators burning 24/7. They have already, they've been wearing masks, which we know cause harm to the lungs and other sinus infections and other problems. There's no science to support it prevents any kind of spread of any disease ever. Every expert has proven that, and in a court of law, I might add. And then you have a bunch of air pollutants, smokers, dimmed sun from chemtrails and other garbage. And they already had a huge respiratory disease rate in that area that people were actually trying to protest about in that region. So all you have to do is take it out of context. Don't tell anybody any of that. take the numbers, make a new test, fake a test that will test just from what I said, your regular waste particles that will come out of your body. Fashion a test just like they made the fake HIV test. Same, they actually modeled this one very nicely after the fake HIV test. A similar PCR process and everything that just basically takes your own waste products, your own DNA wastes, and amplifies them and says that you have this disease. And it's about an 80% false positive test. So now you take the people that normally get sick, and maybe you turn on 5G for a little bit, make more of them, make it look bigger, like make it look like flood the hospital with sick people because you turn on 5G to test your 5G weapon. Ooh, it works really well. Look at them all like having oxygen problems. Fascinating. Love it. Okay, turn it off. We got our node. We're good. Get your tests, get your numbers up. Make sure the fake media, which is basically all the major 8 media conglomerates that are all owned by the same people, to parrot the lie, the story on the news. So if you have no critical thinking skills, you have no ability to do any level of research whatsoever, and you actually believe this fake world, then you're going to be scared, right? Mm-hmm. So make a fear event to do that. So that was the beginning, right? And then you do a second node, say in Italy, where again, same idea. They have really a lot of respiratory problems because they have a lot of pollution in that area. They already have the 5G infrastructure. Very easy to make, oh, look, it's spreading, you know. Meanwhile, not one of the gene fragments is identical because they'll just lie and say it mutated.
Yeah, it's so dumb.
They'll just make up whatever. They'll just say what they're pathological liars. And they're also hyper-intelligent pathological liars. So they're not dumb. So they know what they're doing and they know how to do it. And they know how to manipulate people because they've been studying us through social media for decades. So they've already know how Ireland's going to respond versus Quebec's going to respond versus the United States in different areas are going to respond to the similar crises. So they fashion them accordingly. And that's exactly what we've been seeing. But it is a worldwide effort because this is the New World Order, UN 2030, Agenda 21, that you can go look up. And if you have 2 cents in your brain or 2 cents to rub together, you can figure out that this has been their agenda all along. Make you the bad guy. Your carbon dioxide causes weather change. It's your fault. Your farts do it too. You know, if you eat a cow, you're going to go to hell because they make farts too, and they're going to damage the fake ozone layer that doesn't actually exist. And we're going to make you now the worst of the worst because you're spreading disease. That's all you do. You're like vermin who just spread disease. You can't touch each other anymore because you're just disgusting slime because they hate us. They want transhumanism. They think we're losers, that we need like machine parts and genetically modified to have any value. Because, well, to be honest, a good proportion of us are pretty pathetic. I'm not talking about myself. I wouldn't put myself in that category. But a lot of people are really in a position where they're not very caring and loving, and you know, they're not acting in integrity. So they have somewhat of a point when they say that, you know, people are, you know, disgusting. Some people are disgusting, but that doesn't matter because it should be none of their business where somebody is in their evolution. Okay.
Right. I mean, all
Because
these lies need an element of truth. I mean, like a little bit of they're a little bit. That's why the sleight of hand, because if it was fully on a lie, if you're saying I'm not wearing a hat right now, like it's so easy to see. And so you need a little bit of like, need a little bit of truth or to sweeten the deal or whatever. So Fauci was around during HIV. HIV is a virus. Viruses don't exist the way that they say. So do you think he was kind of in on this from day one? Do you think he's a useful idiot, or do you think he's a person that knows what he's doing?
When you have an unelected individual like that who's part of the agenda, they full well know what they're doing. They're as soulless and criminal as they come. They're basically worse than the mob. And he was probably part and parcel to getting a few people murdered during that time as well. There are questions about certain truthers or people who were speaking out against the HIV lie at that time that suddenly disappeared or suddenly died. And he was found to have threatened them. There's like statements where he's threatened their lives and things like he was, he's a what is it? A goon, So he's just the front man that says out loud, the lies. So he's really good at being a con man. And so that's probably why they called him in on this scam, because he already scammed the HIV thing. So he's good. Might as well, we have the same sort of test. So we'll bring in Fauci because he's good at this whole thing. It's just a repeat. There's been enough time between then and now that the generations will have forgotten all his lies and hoaxes, and they will recycle him, just like they recycle crisis actors all the time too.
So it's interesting. I said that I was gonna ask you about COVID, and we would get to talking about the controllers, but it seems like the whole thing is about the controllers and the scam. We said earlier that kind of like it makes more sense if it comes from within, like the problems, the toxicity, and based on your choices or whatever. But you have mentioned a couple things that you believe do come from outside, like 5G, and of course food. Food comes out come from outside of you, and you mentioned fluoride in a couple of your videos as well. So why don't you just talk a little bit about like what I don't know anything about 5G other than I have friends that talk about them and I trust them, and I don't trust the mainstream. I mean, I think you can navigate a lot just by not just swimming the other way of what your vast majority of like sheeple or controllers are saying. Just go the other way. I'm comfortable with that as a percentage, but what is 5G, and how does it affect your health?
We have to understand we're electrical beings. We're electrochemical beings. We're very sensitive to frequency. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. I find it interesting and fascinating that people understand somewhat that their cell phones are going to talk to somebody that's calling from Japan in, like a few seconds through the air, but yet they have a hard time understanding that we have energy fields that can possibly interact with other people and other gadgets and things. I just find it funny. I always would make the analogy of like, why is it so hard for you to understand how the television works? Like, how tell me how your television works. How are you getting the TV signal? How are you getting the radio signal? What are those things? Right? Those are fields. Those are things coming in the waves of the ether. Okay. Not even the air, the ether. And which of course they took out of the equation. That's one of the frauds that Einstein did. Another fraud, by the way. He took ether out of the equation so that we really have no clue about much of anything about real science.
If you fudge the variables, you're not a scientist. If you ne
That's right.
purposely neglect variables, you're not a scientist. You have to. If you don't do it on purpose, that's one thing. Or if you're just tired, or you whatever. But that is just straight up deception, right? Uh-oh. Can you hear me, Amanda? Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
Okay.
I have to mute my thing every now and again to get feedback because I've just put it on a live on
Oh, you're
Facebook.
fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
So
okay.
anyway, so yeah. Well, if you're there to manipulate the data and get an end result that just because you want it, yeah, you're a schmuck. So you're not a scientist. You're a player, So.
Do you believe the scientific method is good? Like, do you think that's still science?
I think from, you know, working with that method a lot when I was trained as an animal health technician, and also when I worked in a laboratory at the end of my Bachelor of Science, which is in agricultural biotechnology, which is genetically modifying stuff. So I know very much about that. When I was in a lab, yes, you can use it appropriately. There are appropriate uses for it when you have the correct statistical model. When you have a crappy statistical model that you worked inside of that process, you can really manipulate what is seen for on the forefront. You know what I mean? Like you can present the picture differently depending on how you massage the data, right? Like if you want to, you know, when you're making, if you make a meme and then you can put something to the foreground or the background, right? Or like you can dim it or you can make it stronger. You can do that with this model. So it's gold standard for them because it makes them a lot of gold. But it isn't gold standard for truth. It's not gold standard for truth. No.
Gotcha. So just to circle back to 5G real fast, specifically, like one of, you mentioned it earlier and I've heard it mentioned before that it can cause like respiratory issues. How does that work? Like how does a magnetic field cause cellular or respiratory damage? I don't understand that.
You have to understand what the frequency is. So if you have a 60 gigahertz, wave function, then what they notice happen, or what some of the studies and some of the information that you have to really dig for, because a lot of this is suppressed stuff. What they started to notice was that it actually, oxygen tends to absorb the 5G. So it's absorbed into the oxygen, damaging the oxygen itself. So if you breathe in damaged oxygen, what do you think is going to happen to your heart and lungs? What do you think is going to happen to the physical body if you can't oxygenate your tissues and your cells, right? So, of course, you're going to first see respiratory challenges in that. Later, you'll see other tissue degradation and other problems. But it's pretty simple physics, actually.
So when you say it has a frequency, like I've heard that, you know, I come from a, you know, relatively hippie background myself. I'm an artist, I'm a musician. I've tried to learn about this just from friends my whole life. But when you say like a person has a frequency, does that mean every tissue of their entire body has that one frequency, or is it tissue specific?
So your one area of the body, like think about it like this, think about activity. So you can think about your body as like a cityscape, right? And one area of the city is very active that day, right? There's a lot of hustle and bustle and communication, and all of those activities, those micro activities oscillate, and those oscillations will give off waveforms or particle forms, depending. But think of it as like a waveform or a ripple. When you throw something into a pond and you get the ripple wave, but you have all these people throwing them into the pond, so you get all these waves, right? So think of it like that. And then you, in another area of the city, there's a traffic jam. And there's not maybe a lot of movement, but there's maybe a different type of energy. It's a shorter wave because maybe people are angry and they're honking their horns in their car. So it's a bit of a different frequency because it's sharper and quicker. Right. So maybe if someone's relaxed, maybe over in a place I'd like to be in where they're having a lot of sex, it's really a nice long form wave and it's really cool and relaxing. Right. Maybe you've got that. So it's a different area. So think about that as your body. Now you have different areas that are producing different energies. Your heart is beating and very electrical. It has nodes of electricity that always have to happen or you're dead. So that is always putting off a very specific field. In fact, interestingly enough, the Heart Math Institute calculated the field of the human heart to be 6 feet apart, which I find fascinating that they picked that as the, you know, anti-social distancing, factor.
Wow. So it's like it's an isolation of the correct, like a certain frequency. It's kind of just, it's just another variable. Like a certain frequency will affect a certain thing a certain way, because all things have different frequencies. And it's a matter of, I mean, I've heard about this with toppling buildings before, where if you can get the frequency of the building and you, if it's just a matter of resonance. It's not a matter of like force or anything. Like this is a matter of resonance.
Same well, thing you, music. So you have your field, right? So then if you were to take your field, you would, that would be a calculation of the combination of all those parts together. And that would be what emanates off of you, as, and that can be measured. We can measure that, right? Wow. Obviously, if it's a frequency, we can measure. We have devices to measure frequency. And then if it's something like a resonance frequency, that's different, where you have, if say my frequency and your frequency were similar, and we came in close proximity to one another, or we tuned into one another, even at a distance, then we could start to harmonize the frequency together. And that would create oscillation and expansion of that. And that is very powerful. I mean, I know they were using frequency sound therapy. To the Tibetans were able to use those, you know, those long horns that they have, and they were able to actually lift rocks doing that. And there was video of this in like the late 60s that was, of course, confiscated by our really caring, loving government that really wants us to just be healthy and well.
They care.
That really cares about us so much that they would, excuse me, that they would take this footage away from us because they're just trying to protect us from our own selves, you know? It's ridiculous.
Wow, that's crazy. And now you're kind of speaking my language, because I've studied synthesizers a lot, you know, so if you're making your own sound just out of a tone, it's crazy how it works. You can make stuff shake with just a different frequency, just a little turn of the dial, and it's not any louder or any softer. And that's what people that aren't schooled in this stuff don't know, that it's not like a force or a speed thing. It's just like a little dial switch, and it's frequency. That's amazing. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, it was one of your most recent videos about, you said that again, don't know anything about science, but the RNA that they're saying of the SARS-CoV-2 is also just in our body. Well, not also, it just is the thing in our body. Could you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Can you actually give me 1 second? What's happening is I forgot to open my windows and it's so hot in here. I'm like melting.
Go ahead. So, yeah, I can read some of these chats. It's no problem at all. Yeah.
Give me 2 seconds. You're and fine. Then open the window. Thank you.
All right, no problem. What's up, everybody in the chat? Chad's here. Jeffy time. What up, y'all? You got any questions? I think at the end we're going to do, I saw some of these specific stuff about different chemicals and things like that. So probably going to do that in a couple minutes. So if you guys want to pop some questions into the chat, that'd be awesome. What frequency did W use to bring down the Twin Towers? I'm not sure, man. All right. Any questions over here? Waves are bricks. Ripples are rocks. You are the white kid with the hair. Oh, gosh. Okay. All right, guys. So, yeah, let's keep going. So what about this RNA thing? Again, I don't understand anything about this. I don't even know what RNA is. Like, do you see RNA? Like, the only thing I've seen is these websites where it's just a bunch of numbers. And any asshole could be just typing stuff in. Like, I don't know anything about science. So, like, what is this thing you talked about in your last video?
Sorry, I keep pressing the button that is not responding to me. Let me simplify it, okay? What we're seeing here is there's what's called primers. So when you have a piece of genetic material, whether it's DNA or RNA, you'll have a primer piece. It's a small segment, which is like about 12 base pairs involved. And that is like the indicator to the RNA that it can attach at the end of that primer and will begin the transcription and translation process to make more of that material, okay, whether it be RNA or DNA. DNA is double-stranded, RNA is single-stranded. There's different kinds of RNA. There's messenger RNA. There's the one that's going through its transcription. There's ones that's at the ribosome, rRNA, which is producing the proteins, because that's what's the whole process of why we have like the DNA at all. The DNA is basically a blueprint for your protein formation. Okay. And if the protein formation is not done right because the DNA encoding is improper, you won't get proper protein folding and you'll get improper connections when it goes to a cell and it tries to connect to say like a lock and key fit. It won't be the right shape because everything is form and function in our
That's
body.
That's what I was going to say. So it's a matching mechanism. It's like,
right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's a matching mechanism. So you can think of it just to simplify. So what has happened here is what we've uncovered, which is just like what I've been already saying, is the only thing that they're pulling out and their PCR amplifying is our own DNA, because we're the ones making this stuff. We're the ones who make these particles. And these magicians, these hoaxers, these fakers, and these liars, these thieves, and these scoundrels, what they have done is they've lied to you so significantly in the fact that they have taken your own material and told you that you're diseased. So what they're really telling us is we are the virus, and they want us off the planet, off the earth. They want us exterminated. They want us out of here because we're a disgusting, sick virus because we make the particles. So that primer unit that they're one of, there's one of nine different pieces of nucleic acid material that they test in this particular COVID PCR test. Okay. And one of the pieces matches the primer of one of our big chromosomes, chromosome 8. So say in the body, your body wants to replicate 8, it needs that primer sequence as the starting material to tell the RNA, hey, come here, we're eight, come and connect your 3' end to our 5' end and we'll create, and it denatures it, and then it starts its process of adding new base pairs, which are complementary, and then it will take that and it will fashion another layer and it will replicate DNA, which will be the opposite of the RNA, right, in the base pair. So it'll make more copies of itself. So what it's saying is one of the legitimate pieces that they're looking for is us. Okay.
Yeah.
The other pieces are also probably us. We just haven't been able to match them to something specific to say, hey, here's some evidence that you guys are liars and frauds and charlatans, and this is what's going on, right?
Wow.
So that's why it's big news, because it's evidence that they're just testing our own DNA. And then there's questions like, well, why did they go for this particular fake virus? Why this particular hoax? Are they trying to DNA profile us for anything specific? What are they really after with this so-called vaccine? Vaccines that have never saved any life ever. Every story ever told of a vaccine is a lie. And so what are they really trying to do here with this vaccine? And why is Bill Gates, the megalomaniac and the psychopath, trying to make sure that everybody, all 7 billion people, have to get it? You know, why?
It's insane. Because
they're genetically modifying us. They know how to do this. They know how to take perfectly, maybe they're trying to manipulate chromosome 8. Maybe they are, because why would they want to genetically profile the primer for us across the entire earth? What would they gain from that? And how would that alter the outcome of the vaccine, which we know is related to the fact that they've been poisoning us with nanometals, that they've been setting us up for sickness, that they've been dumbing us down, obviously, with fluoride and these sorts of things. They've been putting in, not only can they get DNA, if they inject DNA into us or RNA into us, it can get inside the cell, but then how does it get inside the nucleus? And that's why they need to do something called electroporation. And electroporation is needing a lot of metals, because if you're going to use your 5G infrastructure, your weapon to, you know, say that Italy gets vaccinated and they got 5G. And then, you know, you get the report, they all got it. All right. Okay. Well, it needs 24 hours and then turn on the 5G and they'll get electroporated. And then we'll see how many of them take up the genetic material into their nucleus. And we'll have a marker for that. And we'll be able to test by their symptoms or by whatever the marker happens to be, if they fluoresce green or something, or whatever it happens to be, then we'll know that it worked on them. And maybe they suddenly disappear and we study them, or maybe it's just they've already got it figured out because they've already been stealing people off the streets and experimenting with them anyway.
Wow.
You know, whatever they've been up to, you know?
So like, you know, that's pretty, I mean, it's believable to me because of how few institutions there are. You know, it's the media there. I know there's not that many companies that make these drugs. Yeah, it makes sense. So back to the RNA thing. So they, you know, how new is this information? Like, cause I saw your video from it the other day, but are people just discovering, I don't know, why did it take people so long to be able to, I don't know what the right terminology is, to find out that these two sequences are the same. Why did it take so long?
You know, it's just nobody's really looking in that way. I mean, I thought about it. I've talked about it. I've assumed about it. But I didn't really go to even physically think about looking for it. And this was just someone who had the thought that went, you know what, I'm just going to have a look-see and and see if this matches anything, and see if I get a hit in the genomic database, and
Oh.
maybe we'll get a hit. And he went, oh, I did, because this is exact to this primer. Now, it could be coincidental. Okay, we have to always be very diligent about that. We could be wrong. It could be from something else or whatever. Like I'm always, like you said, I'm willing to be wrong. I'm willing to be corrected or whatever. I just want to have the truth, right? I
Yeah.
just want to know what the right thing is. It's not about ego. It's not about being correct or blah. It's about, is this real? And does this make sense? And is this really what they're doing? Because we don't get, we're not, they're not going, hey, here's what we're doing. I mean, they are in some senses, they're being pretty bold and brash, but for the most part, we're not quite sure where this is going here. Are they going to really be able to do this? Does this make sense physically? Like, are they going to be able to genetically engineer us without huge repercussions? How many of the slaves do they want to engineer, and how many do they want to kill? And, at what percentage will the vaccine kill them versus engineer them? And will the ones that don't get engineered die because it doesn't take, and there's like a kill switch embedded in there? Really, we don't know, right? But so we're speculating on a lot of it. But what we do know is they're not good people. There's been a long-term plan in the works for ages, and anybody with has any research skills at all well knows this. And there's interesting, factors in which it's been the long con. So we've got decades of dumbing down. I mean, decades of putting people's IQs well into what's the average now, like 80 or something like that. I mean, that's crazy. That is not able to critically think. That is not able to do good research. That's not able to really, other than, maybe doing your laundry and taking care of your household a little bit. I don't know what you're supposed to do with 80.
Yeah,
You know
that's a
what I
good point.
mean?
One thing I think about, like, just to play devil's advocate a little bit, or is that, if this goes back to like Pasteur, I mean, that's like, 5 or 6 generations or whatever. I mean, people die along the way, and there's got to be some sort of passing of the torch amongst the controllers. Fauci's gonna die one day, we're gonna die one day, and how do you think that works of just like the long con? I mean, everyone's dead that was alive in the 1800s. So how do you think that works? Is it like a secret society handshake type thing or what?
Well, we know there's secret societies. Kennedy spoke openly about secret societies. It's probably one of the things that got him killed. The secret societies, they're not that secret. We know about the Masonic order. They're pretty in your face. You got the Gmail symbol, the same symbol as their apron. I mean, you can find this stuff everywhere. There's tons of little clubs and cults, the Club of Rome, like, they've got the 13,
Bilderberg. See,
the
yeah. So
Bilderberger,
do you think they're how specific, do you think this is planned out to a T, or like is it a flexible plan? Like, because that's where you get into a lot of variables, the amount of like billions of people have been alive during the process. So do you think, I mean, to me it's you don't have to imagine the specifics, but I like to think about it, where it's like, does Fauci's predecessor say, hey, in 40 years we're about to do some shit, and this is how we're going to do it? Or do you think it's more general than that?
Well, I mean, it's all going to be speculation because I'm not in
You're
any
not
of
there.
those cults, but
Good.
I do know that back in Egyptian times, they had the ability, and it's very disturbing information. So I just kind of warn people that this stuff is not for the faint of heart. But I was researching, I research everything. So I've researched every weird topic you can imagine. And they were talking, there's actually, hieroglyphic information, how to torture someone so that their soul comes out of them and they can put the soul in another body that they've also tortured the soul out of. So they were playing around with some weird, dark, black magic-y stuff. Okay. They were always somehow obsessed with immortality, probably because if they die, they're going into the fiery pit of doom and they're done. Or they're soulless, or who knows? Like, this is all going to be guesswork, but we can assume that they're obsessed with longevity for probably because they're in big cucka if they do actually die. And I remember when David Bowie died. I remember this very particularly because I'm very intuitive and I'm a visionary. I have like prophetic dreams and things like that. And I remember this interview, and I wish I could find the guy's name again. Maybe somebody's seen it, but it was soon after he died. And there was an expert on David Bowie that they had, I think on the BBC or something like that. And this guy was in duper's delight, like I've never seen anyone in duper's delight. And he spoke like David Bowie. He had the mannerisms of David Bowie. He even kind of looked a little bit like David Bowie, but he was a little bit, you know, more disheveled, and he had longer blonde hair and whatever. And what it was like, it was almost like, it was like looking around like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe I'm here. You know, like it was like, oh yeah, I'm doing an interview. Oh yeah, David Bowie did this, that, whatever. And he'd go with these big stories. And I'm like, is this, did they do the soul transfer on this dude? Cause this is weird. And I just remember thinking that, like, that's not a David Bowie fan. That's David Bowie, you know? So we don't know. They could have this technology. They could know how to do this. They could have learned from the Egyptians. They have the Egyptian obelisks in like all the major, you know, in London and in Washington. Like they honor the Egyptian knowledge clearly in your face. So at what level are they practicing some of this stuff? We don't have the direct answers, but we know they're ritualistic. We know they do really weird stuff. Like look at Bohemian Grove. That's creepy as all get out. Okay. Like a big effigy to an owl, yeah. Where you like pretend death rituals and crazy stuff. Like these people are wackadoodle to the max, the point where I don't think most people could even handle knowing how wackadoodle these people are.
Wow. It's also funny. I kind of smile when I even ask that question about like, do you know the specifics? Because what people really do is they act like that not knowing all the specifics is an argument for why the mainstream is 100% believable. And that is just insane to me, because it's like you weren't in the room and you're the first person to admit that you weren't there, but you know there's something going on and you've looked into enough that you don't need to be a Grand Mason. Like the burden of proof is almost on them at that point. Like, why do you trust people that hate you? You know, it's very bizarre. Wow. That's a very honest answer. So I think we have about 20 minutes left right now, and a lot of people have been asking stuff in the chat. So what I really want to do is talk about like kind of just more, a little more rapid fire of specific different chemicals. Like I want to talk about DMSO. I don't know what that is. I have a question right here about Roundup and a couple of questions about vaccines. So first of all, what's DMSO? And, you know, you have a whole website dedicated to it. What is it? What are its benefits?
Yeah, it's a love of mine because it's one of those panaceae that has a lot of things that it can touch. And I love those types of things because we don't need 18 million things. We just need the goodies. Like here's the big guns, I call them, right? So that's one of the big guns. It's dimethyl sulfoxide and it comes from trees. I wrote a book about it. It's called Healing with DMSO. And if you're interested in go to healingwithdmso.com. And it was something that I found out through naturopathic college. Obviously, they taught us that it's used in sports medicine, but I didn't really learn much about it outside of that. And it was only till I moved into my house and store and started to find really good gems, because that's really, when somebody asks me, hey, what's the best vitamin C, or what's the best magnesium, or what's the best zinc, or whatever, I go and I do the research. Like I did years and years of this. What is it? Like we studied it in school, of course. And then I worked at Smith's Pharmacy. So I learned about all different kinds of supplements, what's good, what's bad, what's synthetic, what's good, you know, all these things. So I had the background, but then I wanted to put it into practice, which I did with my clients and my patients. And then I said, when I have a store, I'm going to get only the good things that work and that are effective and that can really help people through stuff. Right. And so when I found DMSO on a store shelf, like I was in a natural store. I was like, oh, I don't have any of that. I should have that. Why don't I have that? So I just bought it. I didn't even need it for anything. I didn't even know what I was buying it for. And then I had a really unfortunate mite infection on my arms because, you know, those are the things, mites and chiggers and certain parasites, they can become more, they're more the problem than whatever this fake virus bullcrap thing is, you know, that's what people don't even think about much. But it really burned my arms when I put it on. I put it on like the 90%. I was like, whoa, this is really strong. I didn't expect this response. And it propelled me into research. And when I started researching, I first found Stanley Jacobs. He was the forerunner of really modernizing DMSO again, because he was a scientist who was doing studying cryopreserving, which is basically trying to preserve tissues under freezing temperatures without destruction. Because if you freeze, organs, the crystals inside damage the cells. You can't use the organs anymore. But if you can use certain substances to still preserve the organ for transplant at the same time, not damage the cells, you've got a winner. And somebody had found it out in London and sent it to him and said, you should study this because I think you're going to like it for cryopreserving because we've noticed it does that. And so I started reading like about this history and about, then I started reading the studies and I just couldn't stop. Like I literally, everything in my world just disappeared except that for multiple days. And so I know when I get called into something, it's very obsessive. and then that was exciting. And then what happened is I just did a video called All About DMSO immediately after that. I just was so excited. I'm like, it stops strokes and heart attacks. It's anti-inflammatory. It's transdermal. It'll take vitamins and nutrients. And if you mix it with it, it'll take it through the skin. So you don't even need to eat the vitamins and nutrients. You can actually put it through your skin. Wow. You know, it's anti-aging. It heals everything it touches. It strengthens all your tissues. It delivers oxygen to tissues. I mean, what doesn't it do, right? And so after I did that video, which was my first ever that really kind of took off and got a lot of the viewers, and it was exciting, right? I was excited to teach it and to tell it. And it was obviously what people really wanted to know about. And what was interesting is really there's not a lot of talk about it, sort of relative.
Never heard of it until 2 days ago,
right? And I was like, "Why don't people know about this? This is wrong. Something's wrong." Like, wow, they suppressed this one.
It's a lotion. It's like a topical.
It's a substance that becomes a liquid. So it's once the pulp and paper industry remove the DMSO, which is a waste product for them, because the DMSO is what makes trees strong and upright. And if you want to make pulp and paper, you got to get that out of there.
Okay.
And so they use this white liquor substance and they wash away the DMSO. And so other industry takes the DMSO and purifies it.
Oh,
that way. So it's in a liquid format. It also can be derived MSM sulfur. More people know about MSM. MSM can be derived from DMSO, and that's in a crystalline format that you can take orally for like muscle repair and injury and that sort of thing.
Wow.
And it's very anti-inflammatory. I talk a bit about MSM in my book as well,
okay,
because they're related, but they're different. They behave different. They have different properties, and DMSO just kind of got left aside.
Yeah.
So wow, it's very,
all that stuff is linked below in the show description. And so healingwithdmso.com, and you got a book on it too. I have a question from the chat right here. I don't, it's interesting that Nephilim brings this up, the guy in the chat, because I've been hearing about gluten intolerance and celiac disease, like gluten-free, but he asks, do you think that if Roundup has caused the rise in gluten intolerance? Do you know much about Roundup? Uh-oh, can't hear you. I can't hear you. I can't hear you.
Sorry. Yes, I have as I mentioned, I have a degree in agricultural biotechnology, which is genetic modified organisms. I mean, we had Monsanto come into our classroom to give the spiel, the lie that they tell the farmers. You know what they tell the farmers? They say, here's a chimpanzee DNA and here's human DNA. And here's the differences and here's a flea DNA and whatever. So what they do is they pretend they know something about DNA and they're teaching it. And it's really big and fancy. And these are farmers. They don't have a science background, right? And then they say, all we're doing is changing one little base pair in there. That's it. It's minor. And what it does is it makes the plant strong and not vulnerable to disease. And it's wonderful and everything's blah, 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 blah. And you know, I challenged them on that, and they didn't like that. And neither did my teacher. But they're
seem a nightmare for those in power. Yeah,
it was a nightmare. I was a nightmare student for pretty much every teacher. Yeah.
Awesome.
like in economics, I'm like, so don't you think that at some point we're assuming that in our economic models that it's infinite amounts of available materials? Don't you think that might be a problem in the model because it's not infinite?
No big deal.
Don't ask those questions. This is how we do it. It's like, yeah. Oh my God, okay. forget I asked. what was the base of the question?
If you think Roundup is a cause for the gluten sensitivity and the whole like gluten craze stuff.
Yeah, so exactly. So think about, it's not even just glyphosate. It's also any other pesticide and toxin, something that causes chronic inflammation and destruction to the gut. If the gut is not proper, remember I said form is function. If you're putting like acids and things that are destructive to the DNA itself that create the proteins, that create the cilia structures, the brush border that helps you digest your food, what do you think is going to happen? That's literally what these morphed DNA bits do to us. They confuse our system. And so they've actually found that people who eat Roundup make their own pesticides, continue to make the pesticides inside their gut.
They're poisoning people.
Like forever. You're now a genetically modified organism inside your gut, making your own pesticides, because that's what the DNA is telling the plant to do, is to make its own pesticide. Right. So you don't have to spray. They still spray the hell out of it anyway, but that's the so-called argument for them. But really, I think that the deeper argument is they're trying to poison populations. I think that's, you know, and the handlers, they don't know that. The handlers are told, like the guy giving the lecture, he's told that it's good. He's told that it's going to save humanity. He's told that people are starving and this is going to feed the world. This is what they tell people. And people don't go, yay, that's so nice. They're so non-discerning. They don't even think that that could be a con man, or that the man that's speaking has been conned. And that's why he's so believable. They just don't seem to think that way. Right. So yes, it's glyphosate poisoning. And not only that, it's hybridized products are also not very digestible.
Okay.
So yeah. Bad wheat. Use organic, heritage, wheat.
Okay. Wow. And so it's again, the sleight of hand. It's like the order of operations that there is something wrong, but it's not the enemy at the gates. You know, like it's not just wheat. Oh, wheat is, you know, that's it. So another question from the chat, where did I see this? You mentioned vitamin C earlier. I was going to ask about cancer too, but like, so he asked, should vitamin C infusion be a standard for cancer treatment?
Well, if we actually had real healthcare, of course it would be part of that. It would be one of the first things they would realize is that the terrain is imbalanced, because cancer is a terrain imbalance and there's multiple causes. And a lot of it is emotionally caused. There's emotional trauma or shock. And what happens is it creates a stagnation in the body, and that stagnation festers. And usually you'll see a lot of bacteria at that site for a good while. So you'll see people thinking like they're having bacterial infections. And then as it continues to morph, it'll go into more mold or fungal forms, because really the hyphae are required to really start to wall off some of the toxins that are oozing from this stagnant pond or pool of waste that can't get out of the body. Because when you go into shock, your adrenals are pumped up, you're fight or flight mode, your cortisol is really high. And so your body's waiting for the attack or what it's going to do to survive. And it's not thinking about digestion, assimilation, nutrient delivery, waste removal. It's like, what's happening? What's happening? Can we survive this? Can we survive this? Like the whole time, right? So then you make the stagnant ponds. And if you're not able to resolve or overcome that, so your nutrition's poor, you put all these chemicals on and in your body, you still have lots of stress, you don't sleep properly, you smoke cigarettes, you do all kinds of drugs, you don't exercise, and all these factors, right, contribute and add to that burden of the body. So if you want to heal it, you get the nutrition up, you get the toxins out, you deal with the emotional burdens that happen in the first place, you get out of stress, You get your sleep back in order, you go out into the sun, you hug people, you look at their smiling faces, you know, that kind of thing. You have, you know, good relationships, you
real
have
medicine. Real medicine.
Sun, earth, water, wind, you know, like nature, you know, those things.
Wow.
And you heal. So IV is fine in that model, but I'd argue, do you even really need it? I was trained in all IV therapy. I was going to do that. I was going to do orthomolecular medicine and IV therapy. I was passionate about it because I really wanted something that would encourage those blocks to be pushed right through. And sometimes it's appropriate. Sometimes that person doesn't have the fortitude, strength, money, resources, or whatever circumstances to actually overcome it in other ways, like by doing coffee enemas, for example. They're too tired to do it, or they can't deal with the emotional stuff until they feel stronger to actually face it and actually like go through the pain of what they'll have to feel, because a lot of people just suppress their pain. They don't express it. They don't speak. They hide and they keep it covert, and then it festers inside of them and creates disease, right? So expression is healing always. But what does this model do? Suppresses, take a pill, suppress the pain, put a Band-Aid over the check engine light, ignore, you know, like just suppress it with something else to numb you. That's what people do. And then they wonder why they get sick, right? And that medical model is right there waiting to take your money because you don't want to do the research. And like back to what you said about laziness, you know, you don't want to do the work that's required to transform yourself because it does take work. I mean, look at the butterfly and the chrysalis that's trying to get out. They're working hard. They're sweating to get out of there. You know, they're not just like, oh, maybe someone will come and open it for me. You know,
it's initiative. Yeah.
Initiative. Wow. Yeah, exactly.
So last little chemical question from the chat. Me and my stream before, we've talked about pine gum turpentine, and there's kind of two sides. Like some people are like, you're drinking paint thinner, and some people, they say the benefits of drinking, I think it's called turpentine, but it's not like the stuff you get at CVS. And do you know much about that or whether there's benefits there?
Oh yeah. It's a powerful, wonderful, tree, again, from a tree. So we have DMSO from a tree. We have turpentine from a pine tree. I remember first when I learned about this remedy, I had a precious elder in my store. He was 90 something years old, late 90s. And I was like, oh my gosh, when I see an elder, I see a gem. And another brainwashing tactic of the elite is to make us discount the old, to always want youth. Youth is like gold to them. Youth is everything. Youth is like, because you know why? Because they like to steal the energy of youth, because they hate dying. They're afraid to die. They care about immortality. So what do? Is they suck the life out of the youth. They harvest our louche, our energy. But once you're old, we don't care. We can't suck your life force out of you. We can't manipulate you. Right. So that's why they discount our elders. But I see it the exact opposite. The elders have lived generations. They've seen through the BS. They've matured their soul force. They've done lots of karma. They're wise, and I want to talk to them. So this guy, when he came in, said, sir, you would do me a great honor if you would please tell me, what did you use for things when you were a boy? What did you use for pain or arthritis? Or what happened if you had a cold? Like, what did you guys do? And he said, turpentine. I'm like, what? I said, come again? He's like, turpentine. I'm like the paint there? He's like, yep. I'm like, okay. We'd rub that on our joints and the pain would go away. We'd drink that and it would help our bowels and our guts and get rid of parasites. And I'm like, well, thank you for sharing that. I will now do my research on that. Right. And of course it's purified. It's not going to be one that has toxic solvents in it. Like paint thinner that's cheaply made, just like DMSO that's cheaply made for industry, that you're going to have that on every scale. You're going to have cheap crap made that's not done properly, and you're going to have properly made stuff. So when you have properly made turpentine, I like the diamond brand. It says G Diamond on it. That's a pretty good one. You can find it pretty much anywhere. Dr. Jennifer Daniels, she's been very, you know, vocal about it. It's one of her passions. She takes it every day for youth, you know, immortality, speaking of, right? And she uses it for particular parasite cleanses as well, which most of us have, and to eliminate waste from the body and heal all kinds of situations. So yes, it's very valuable. Learn about it. She has protocols for free online on how to start taking it and using it. Candida, wow. That kind of stuff.
Okay. One thing I let in my notes, and someone just brought this up in the chat. I'm glad that someone brought it up. We covered bacteria. We covered viruses. But what about fungal? Is that real, like they say? Or, you know, like, what's the deal with because that's the third big one of like disease that you learn about in school. What about fungal? Is that real as they say, or is that something different?
Yes, of course it's real. It comes from that 16-stage somatid cycle. Remember, these things are polymorphic. So a bacteria morphs into a fungus. It becomes a fungus. a fungus becomes a mold. Okay. So, and then also when you get to those spore forms, you can actually create those little virus particles as well. If you require little packets or snippets of DNA or RNA to be sent to damaged cells to repair them, like a little toolbox. The body's somatids are miraculous. They will heal everything. And they will change the form and their function accordingly. That's why all of this medicine bollocks that they're pushing on us with vaccines and the live viruses and boogeyman things out in the air that are so-called trying to kill us, why it's a hoax. Because once you realize that one cell shape can change into another depending on its terrain, what on earth are you vaccinating against? Yourself? Your own body? What, how would that whole theory falls apart? You're giving yourself a little taste of a disease that you might catch over in Africa or something so that it's smart, so that it can figure it out, so that it can protect you. Doesn't exist in reality, okay? Your body creates the fungal forms if it needs to get rid of metals. If the bacterial colonies in the gut are damaged from antibiotics, it will create fungal forms like called candida to come and try to do the job that your gut flora was doing. Doesn't do the best job as well as they did, but they'll try. The body will always try to have a workaround for the dumbass crap that you're doing to yourself.
Yep.
So when you stop poisoning yourself, the candida retreats and actually changes shape back to its bacterial form. If the bacteria are not needed, it will change back all the way to the tiny little teeny cell called a somatid or a microzyma.
Wow.
And you can't vaccinate against any of that stuff.
Wow. Wow. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for being so generous with your time. It was a great interview today. All the stuff is linked below in the show description, like your websites and stuff. But why don't you just tell people the best way to find you online and we'll get out of here. Okay.
Sounds great to me. So I have my product and store website, yumnaturals.com. I have if you need to book me for a consultation, it's yummy.doctor. So doctor is like not, it's not yummy.doctor.anything else. It's just yummy.doctor. That's it. So people are like, .com, .what? And I'm like, no, like .doctor. it's a domain, okay?
Yeah.
And healingwithdmso.com for my book, although my book is also available on the Yum Naturals site as well. I'm on Instagram as Amanda Vollmer, AmandaVollmer. And I'm also on Facebook with all of those titles I just said. I have basically a page for everything.
You do. So. I see it. Yeah, it's great. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for coming on. I'll be following your work closely. And thanks to everyone in the chat out there. This will be uploaded as a podcast in 3 or 4 days, and I'll make sure to spread it around. And I think I'm probably going to chop it up too, because we covered more like so many specifics today, and I want to know what to tell people, even if I just plagiarize from you, because I'm so dumb when it comes to science. It's just like, it's so good to have some of these questions answered by, you know, no offense to you guys, someone that's not in a live chat, you know. So thank you so much for coming on today, Amanda, and this will up